ministry wife is a vocation without a job description. And let's be honest, sometimes it seems like ministry might be easier if we did have one. If you are a ministry wife like me and are looking for hope, perspective, and a little bit of practical advice regarding your role, you're in the right place. Hi, I'm Christine Hoover, author of How to Thrive as a Pastor's Wife. Welcome to the Ministry Wives Podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. Join me as we hear from guests from various ministry contexts, having authentic conversations about our shared joys and challenges, even the ones we're unsure we can talk about. No topic is off limits. Today, my guests are Jen Wilkin and JT English. Jen is an author and Bible teacher from Dallas, Texas, and JT serves as the lead pastor of Storyline Church in Arvada, Colorado. Jen and JT used to serve together on staff at the Village Church in Dallas, and they continue to collaborate together on many things, including the Knowing Faith podcast and on a recently released book called You Are a Theologian, which we talk about in our conversation today. They also often speak about their friendship, and so I asked them to join me today to talk about how they work wisely and well as brothers and sisters and colleagues. In this conversation, they invite us into a theological framework for seeing one another as made in the image of God and contributing to the health of our churches through biblical friendship. Here, friends, is my conversation with Jen Wilkin and JT English. It is my great privilege to welcome Jen Wilkin and JT English to the podcast. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
So glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, and JT, this is the first time you've been on, but I've had your wife on as a guest, and I love getting to talk to her.
It's a step down. My wife is my favorite human on the planet. So she's in the other room. I can go grab her.
Oh, okay, great. Let's just scrap y'all, bring her in. Yeah. But yeah, that's a great episode. I got to talk to her about her work, which was really fun.
Yeah. That's what she's doing right now. She's we've got on a walk this morning and getting kiddos ready for stuff. And here she is just working away. And I get to be on a podcast with you guys, which is great.
And I've had Jen on as a guest several times, but I'm glad to have y'all together talking about your working relationship. So I'd love to start, JT, with you, because Jen shared when she was a guest before, just kind of her, what I call her origin story, like how she got to where she is. And you were a part of that at the Village Church when y'all were serving there on staff together. So I would love to get your perspective on what you saw in Jen and how you advocated for her there at the Village.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple parts to this. So first, I grew up as my parents got divorced when I was a kid, and I watched my mom enter a professional workplace. She was a vice president for the Colorado Rockies baseball team in the 90s and early 2000s. Wow. And she was a single mom, a young woman working in what you would call the bro club. Like if there's a bro club, it is professional baseball. And she was having a really hard time kind of breaking barriers. But being an only child, I was kind of like in rooms with her, and I'd see her try to advocate for herself, and I'd see her get invited and included into things. I'd also see her kind of run into barriers. And I didn't understand that as a young 13, 14, 15, 16 year old kid. And I was like, man, she's doing a great job. She should be allowed into these environments. And I was able to see the challenges that she was facing in the workplace and not being included in some spaces. And I didn't understand that. Then kind of fast forward, you know, 5, 10, 15 years, I enter into ministry. I show up at the Village. But before I went to the Village, Jen remembers this part of the story. I was in Louisville at another church, Sojourn Community Church, and my wife had heard some of Jen's stuff and was like to Nora Allison. Greg Allison was my PhD supervisor. Nora was running women's ministry. She's like, you got to bring Jen out. And I was like, yeah, you should. I don't know Jen, but that sounds great. And she would come home crying each day. Macy would, after Jen would teach the Bible at this women's Bible conference. And I was like, don't bring her ever again. I can't deal with all of this emotional stuff that she's coming home with. And she would say, she's teaching the Bible in ways I haven't heard before. She's helping me understand scripture in deep ways. So that was before I was ever considered to be on staff at the Village. I then show up at the Village and realize Jen's editing the blog. She's working on the communications team and had some significant roles at TBC, was also leading a community Bible study in Flower Mound. And I said, this is crazy. So I was overseeing the kind of the education department. We called it the Institute. And I said, will you come teach women's Bible study with me? And I think sometimes I get credit for like finding a diamond in the rough, which isn't the case. Anybody in my role who showed up at the Village would have said, Jen, would you please teach the Bible here? So It was one of those things where I just, and I think what happened over the course of those years is not only did I think make a good professional decision of saying, Jen, can you help me in this department? What really became beautiful in my 5 or 6 years there, and I think Jen would agree with this, is Jen and I developed a really deep friendship and like brother-sister relationship that we both were longing for in the context of the local church, where we saw each other's gifts. We wanted to elevate each other's voices. We wanted to advocate for each other in deep ways. And that was really an easy decision for me because I trust Jen. I love Jen. She's so competent in her role. And to call her a colleague was something that was easy for me, but it's not always easy for women in the life of the local church to find men who will call them colleagues and brothers and friends. And so that was, that's something that Jen and I have had the honor to have.
Well, I'd love to hear more just briefly about how, so looking at the bigger picture of the church, how would you encourage men serving on staff in churches to do that kind of same advocacy for women who are serving alongside them?
Yeah, I think the simple answer is we need to recover friendship. And that isn't just how do we get people on staff in churches and how do we advocate for women. And so brothers, and I would say this for sisters too, we need to consider each other friends and help each other the same way we did on playgrounds when we were 5 or 6 years old. That can actually be the case when we're adults. We can have friends in the life of local churches and care for them and tell them we're proud of them and tell them that we want more from them. And so I think that's all that Jen and I have tried to say is we're before Jen and I are colleagues, before we're doing podcasts together or working at TBC, we're friends, which means I want to see her succeed in her role, whether that's on staff at a church or for my wife. Macy's also my friend. She's my wife, but she's my friend. So I get to encourage her and say, hey, you're doing a great job. I want you to keep going. And so I just think, brothers, if you're listening to this or ministry wives, if you're listening to this, look for friendships.
Well, Jen, I'd love to hear from you. Y'all have collaborated, you and JT and Kyle Worley have collaborated on Knowing Faith podcast. And now you and JT have come out with a book, which we're going to talk about at the end. But I would love to hear from you about how you do this. What does this look like on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, whatever it is? Because now y'all are serving in two different churches. How do you cultivate this collaboration?
Well, thankfully, with a podcast, the amount of time that we get to spend just recording means that we do have overlap in our schedules, even though we're not all in the same room anymore. So there's just been, honestly, now that we're in different places, there's been, I feel like, a lot of mutual support for each other and problem solving and just as new challenges come up. And then just a lot of opportunity. The three of us have been blessed. And so we still have a very pronounced sense of shared mission and vision that we're getting to walk out in a different way than when we were all at the same church, but in a way that feels meaningful and important. So, yeah, but I mean, also just enjoying each other, like, you know, that we have to edit out all the parts on the podcast where we're laughing so hard that we can't keep talking. So,
there's a lot of banter, you guys.
I'm trying to keep it at a minimum, but I'm losing the battle.
Team banter. Yeah.
I want to ask, I'm asking some of this from the perspective of ministry wives who are listening. And I know I've gotten a few questions, and even in my own life as a pastor's wife, I have kind of wondered how do we do this well with my husband working on staff with women, and what you're describing, using that word intentionally, friend, to describe one another. How have you put limits to the friendship or boundaries?
You know, the lie that has been told to a generation, not just of pastors, but of people, is that any intense feeling or strong feeling for another person, whether same sex or opposite sex, must have a sexual or romantic tone to it. The Bible says something very different. It uses the term one another over and over and over again in the New Testament. And so I would say to ministry wives, but also to pastors, there's a theological issue at stake in this conversation. Your theology of what it means to be human and what it means to be in the family of God is on the line here in this conversation. And we understand in everyday terms that a brother and a sister exist in a non-sexualized space, and that a brother exists in a non-sexualized space. Like, that is, you know, that's a basic recognition. And so in the church, when you extend the metaphor of all the places where this should be recovered, if it's not in the church, I don't know where it will be. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that we get to ignore everything that's going on around us and throw caution to the wind and do whatever we want. But we do recognize that each of us is dealing with our own set of strengths and weaknesses. And so if you are spiritually immature in this area, then that's something you want to pay attention to. But I would question, are you working to grow toward deeper maturity in this area?
JT, would you add anything?
One of the things that I think Jen and I have worked over time, along with Kyle and other colleagues, like this isn't just the two or three of us doing this. Like right. We have so many ministry friends and partners, is relationships move at the speed of trust. And every trust or every relationship has risk and every relationship has reward. And that includes the potential for sexual sin. It also includes the potential for slander and gossip. If Jen were to begin slandering me, we wouldn't be friends for very long, you know? And so it's important to realize, like, let's broaden these categories and say the basic ways that we've been taught to think about relationships when we were kids are still true. Like, I want to be friends with Jen because she believes the best about me. I want to be friends with Jen because she's advocated for me. I want to be friends with Jen because I think she genuinely cares for me. And she, Jen has built trust in my life over time. And I think that can be true, not just in the categories of gender. The same is true with Kyle. If Kyle were slandering me, man, we'd have a tough relationship. And so what I would encourage men and women, ministry wives who are listening to this, is apply the broad categories of relationship that you're normally, that you're teaching your kids to these relationships. There are untrustworthy people and there are people that you shouldn't build friendships with. And those, that means risk and danger. So stay away from those things. But over time, you can just build friendships with people in the same way that we've been learning since the playground.
That's good. I'm wondering, Jen, I like how you describe the spiritual mature, spiritually immature. And I think that there are women listening who are probably thinking, well, I sometimes struggle with maybe I have questions or I don't always feel totally sure about my husband working so closely because with women because they're working in an emotional, spiritual arena. They're dealing with heavy things together. And so for a woman listening who's thinking, well, if I am struggling with that, what would you say to her?
Well, I want to say there are reasons that these narratives are running in our heads, and I don't want to diminish the impact of that. I mean, it's valid that someone might think that, but I do think it raises a question of a husband in ministry's preparedness to be in ministry. If he is not capable of handling the kinds of conversations that are par for the course in ministry settings, then maybe he's not qualified for ministry. We should have people in ministry who are mature enough to enter into those conversations and not sexualize another person. So, and I would say that what you're seeing in a thought process like that is there needs to be a conversation between the husband and the wife at the trust level, not between the husband and everybody else he's interacting with trust level. He may not have trust level issues with the people he's meeting with at all. And again, I'm not saying that this wife is paranoid or stupid. I think that these are the questions that we've been trained to think in terms of. But maybe have that conversation with your husband. What, you know, how do you think about this? But don't let your default setting be you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Because when we read the New Testament one another's, we would be crazy to think that what it's saying is the men are going to practice the one another's with each other and the women are going to practice the one another's with each other. Or, you know, only a young man and a 65-year-old woman can be friends, or only, you know, I mean, we have all of these crazy, you know, or she has to be, I mean, the number of times I've heard, well, she has to be ugly. You know, it's like, no, you know, I know it's terrible, but you know, it's been said out loud.
You're calling us to actually apply scripture and say, if we're to love one another as the Bible calls us to, it's going to move us past even the boundary conversation to how do we do this? How do we do this well and not run away from what scripture calls us to?
Not only that, but forbidding an entire category of relationships actually sexualizes something that wasn't sexualized until the moment that you forbade it.
This is what I love about y'all is y'all are such deep theological thinkers, but you bring it to the practical level. So thank you for being that. those people to us. JT, I would love to talk about, we've kind of danced around this idea of like pastors and how pastors are relating to women. And I have experienced different things as I've gone around. I know, I'm sure Jen has too, where you never know what room you're walking into, how people are going to relate to you, how they're going to interact with you, generally not interact with you, when pastors, men. So I'd love to, for you to talk to us about how, as a pastor, have you found ways to relate to women, to honor them, to know them, to minister to them, instead of putting these, as Jen has described, kind of a women over here, men over here. How can you, as a pastor, encourage other pastors, or how would you encourage them to do these things well?
Yeah. I got to be honest with you. I'm still learning how to do this. I mean, this is something that I think is a lifetime practice. I don't have like a playbook. And to be honest with you, I was also concerned leaving the village. Like, it was so easy with Jen. It was easy because her gifts were so obvious. Our friendship was so easy. Like, it was just one of those things that it felt like in God's providence. I showed up at the village. She was in her season of life at just the right time. And I wondered, man, I'm going to a new church. I don't know this staff. I don't. It was just a different thing. It was a smaller staff. And I show up, and there was a woman named Lindsay Acasella who was on the search team to bring me. She was working as an assistant here. And I just kind of began to develop a friendship with her. She actually came to the village to interview me with some of the elders. And so I just got to know her early. And now Lindsay is one of my most trusted ministry colleagues. But how that happened over time, and pastors, I would encourage you to do this, is I just recognized her gift and celebrated her. I don't think she'd be uncomfortable with me sharing this, but Lindsay was never really told that she was a great leader. And she's a great leader. And I just said, Lindsay, you're a great leader. And she just like, poof. And it wasn't like an overly emotional, she was just like, JT, nobody's ever said that to me. I've got another woman on staff who served on staff at another church in town for about 10 years and now is at our church, Storyline. And she's one of the most gifted creative minds that I've ever worked with. Like, I would put her up against like a 10-person creative staff at most churches. Mm-hmm. And I just, like, yesterday I was in her office and I was like, Jackie, I'm so thankful that you're my colleague here. I love watching you use your gifts and you're doing such a great job. And again, like, they just respond by saying, nobody has ever said this to me before. And for pastors, it's really easy to do that. Maybe you have an associate pastor or a student minister and they preached for you on Labor Day weekend and they're going to do that here soon, whatever it is. And you get up on the pulpit, you're like, aren't we so thankful for our student minister who preached the gospel well? Like, it's easy to celebrate the bros. And pastors, we need to celebrate our sisters and just tell them. And it's not hard. Like, just say, like, look them in the eye and say, I see the gifts that God has given you. I want to celebrate those things. I want to find ways to elevate those things in the life of our church because you are indispensable in the life of what God is doing right now. And I'm so thankful for your gifts. It's actually really easy. See their gifts, call them out, and celebrate them.
Well, and what's been funny to me in this whole conversation is like, a lot of times I'm asked this question, like, but how? Like, how is this possible? And it's like, we're just doing the same thing, only, you know, with someone of the opposite sex. Like, my question, I'm like, why is this so hard? Like, what is it about meeting with us? And so some of it is just, obviously it is easier, you know, from an optics perspective to spend a lot of time in single gender spaces. It's easier from an optics perspective, but the friendship that I have with JT, the friendship that I have with Kyle, the friendships that I have with other men in ministry have all been developed along appropriate lines.
And I'm not doing that with Kyle either.
He's not doing that with Kyle either.
My family.
Yeah. And so again, a lot of this is common sense that has just fallen by the wayside in a culture of fear, in a subculture of fear. And so the number of easy ways there are for friendships to develop in unquestionable settings, it far exceeds the number of shocking ways that might actually take place. People are going to have moral failures. And every time that happens, someone will say, see, I told you everybody was wrong about men and women being friends. Yeah. It's like, no, the exception doesn't prove the rule. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I would love to see, is for us to have a greater fear of the loss of male-female partnership than we do of the mm-hmm. fear of the person who's going to throw themselves on a landmine.
Yes, mm-hmm. fear is the word that comes down to mind for me, what I see, what keeps this from happening. And I think we just have this, it has to be an either or, like either I honor my wife as a pastor or I do this thing with someone else, or we just lose the both and we don't know how to do that well. It doesn't seem like, but also I think there's fear, at least, I don't know, JT, you can speak to this. It seems sometimes like from pastors, I sense this fear of what other pastors are going to think about them if they are trying to do this well. So I don't know if you've experienced any pushback, or, you know, you have felt that fear at times. I don't know. I'd love for you to speak to that.
You know, I do. I think that that's true, period. I've never felt that. And so I don't know that I can, like, my relationship with my wife is so strong, and I, like, she's my best friend, and like, we have a good, healthy marriage. And so, like, I just know that, like, if some guy on Twitter is like, I can't believe he's celebrating a woman at his church, I'm like, whatever. Like, I just don't care. And maybe that's just me. Maybe that's kind of my, I don't know, personality coming out a little bit. It just isn't going to influence the way that I lead my family and the way that I lead my church. And if I do get pushback, the reward of celebrating Lindsay or Jackie or another woman in my staff is better than the fear of potentially getting pushback from somebody that I disagree with theologically. So pastors, I would just say, like, I'm going to give something real practical. I'm not sure if pastors listen to this, ministry wives. If your husband's a pastor, tell him to do this and encourage him. Just like at the next staff meeting, have him look another person in the eye, could be a man, could be a woman, and celebrate them. The Bible tells us to outdo one another in showing honor. And for it could be your assistant, it could be the women's minister, it could be somebody on the group, whatever it is, and just say, hey, I saw what you did this week. You did a really great job leading that new here discussion, whatever it is, and just begin cultivating. Jen and I were in a staff meeting once at the church that she's currently at, and I previously worked at the Village. And there was a moment, Jen, I think you know the moment I'm about to talk about, when Jenna got up and celebrated Ryan, and it was two people who worked in the same department for almost a decade. And then they just kind of celebrated each other in this real moment of vulnerability. And it was like a culture shift for our church, Jen, wouldn't you say?
He was single at the time. He's married now, but he was single at the time. She was married. She's younger than he is. And I had served with them for probably 8 years at that point. And it was his birthday. Mm-hmm. And she said, in her words of affirmation, you're one of my best friends and I love you. Mm-hmm. In front of the whole room. And the whole room,
100 people in there,
broke into applause. And I remember thinking, okay, we've turned a corner. Like, it's a safe place for us to acknowledge a genuine love and admiration for someone and not be called out as taking a risk.
Yeah. Mm. And I think that if we can find a way to do this, not just in our local churches, but in kind of the culture of evangelicalism, I think that'd be such an attractive thing to such a polarized world right now where we're credited for creating enemies. What if we were credited for creating friends and brothers and sisters and just celebrating each other? I mean, what happens when you do it is it's so freeing and rewarding when you just look another human in the eye. Again, this isn't just a gender thing. This is a human thing. Like, if anybody's listening to this podcast, raise your hand if you're over encouraged. Right? Nobody's raising their hands right now. Nobody's raising their hands because we all know our weaknesses and our faults and the ways that we wish we could have done things better. And so pastors, especially as leaders, when you have the opportunity to your staff and to your congregation, like, this isn't just a staff thing. This is also a congregation thing. Like, pastors, you've got men and women in your church that are leading companies, they're CEOs and they're killing it, but they're also tired. And if you just look them in the eye and say, I'm so proud of you, you're doing a great job. I want to keep running with you. I want to encourage you. How can I help you this week? I see the gifts you have. God's using them. Man, I think this would be one of the greatest gifts that you could give your church, your body, your fellowship, your family. Like, one of my favorite things to do is get down on my knees with Thomas and Bailey, my eight and 6-year-olds, be like, I'm so proud of you guys. I don't just love you. I like you. You're great kids. I'm so thankful you're part of the family. Let's keep doing this together. And that's what pastoring is encouraging the flock, whether it's a female colleague or another lay person or it's another staff member. It's just, let's encourage one another, outdo one another in showing honor.
Mm, that's great. Well, Jen, I know you lead. You probably supervise a lot of people in your role. And I would imagine men and women. And so I'd love to know from you what perspectives or considerations do you teach them and help them understand as far as serving together on those teams with each other?
So, yeah, I do think what you're hearing in the way that JT is talking about this, it's applicable for me as a leader as well. And it's the pattern of Genesis chapter 2. It's that when we see people as people first and then as their gender second. And that doesn't mean that their gender doesn't matter. But when Adam sees Eve, he says, she's like me. That's the first thing he says. He sees her as another human before he sees her as a female. And so, you know, you can hear what JT's saying. It's like, I just see people as people. And it doesn't mean that he has no reference point for the fact that he's talking to a woman or a man. It means that his first impulse is, hey, I see that you're a person of value who's contributing. And so it was funny because when I stepped into this role at the Village, there's a guy in my downline who probably for the first time in his ministry trajectory had a female boss. And it was really important to me that I not do to him what I had experienced when the situation was reversed. I didn't want him to feel like he was at a social disadvantage because I had two female direct reports and a male direct report. It is easier for me to go to lunch with a female report than it is with a male report. So, but you know, I pay attention. We pay attention to those things. But what I didn't want was for him to feel that he couldn't do his job effectively or have access to me as much as his two counterparts did. And so that was something that I've had to pay a lot of attention to. And what ended up happening over the course of the time that we worked together is we've developed a great friendship. You know, and again, like the key here, friendship is about mutual respect. And if you've ever experienced it in any friendship, you know how sweet and life-giving that is. And so it's asking, what other relationships can I find mutual respect in? I know it in my marriage, or I know it in, and kind of to circle back to what JT had said, the fact that JT and his wife had a demonstrably healthy relationship, mattered to me in the way I could interact with him.
Jen, we've talked a lot about JT advocating for women in ministry, but I'd love for you to say, how can we as women advocate for our brothers in ministry?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that we can do is be willing to continue to put the offer of friendship on the table, even if we have perhaps been made to feel like we're not welcome in a space or like we're a threat instead of an ally. And I know the fatigue that can build around that. I do. But I think that we're called to continue to extend the hand of friendship. And you might be surprised. You know, it may not be every opportunity that you have to do so that someone responds in kind, but along the way, you might just pick up one or two or four really good, meaningful friendships. And the reason I think that we have to stay the course on doing that good work is because I know far too many men in ministry who don't know a woman who they would consider to be their intellectual equal or their theological equal. And I don't know, even fewer of those men would I know who would say that they know a woman they consider to be their intellectual or theological superior. If you were in the average workplace, you can find men on the regular who know a woman who they think is smarter than them or has more experience than them. But imagine how that shapes the way that church culture is going to play out if women are always seen as just a little less than. And so one of the gifts that we can give to our churches is to keep saying, I'm here, I have things to offer, and to demonstrate, I always say, be a unicorn, be the category of woman that perhaps they have never run into before, and then they have to deal with the reality of your existence.
You are that unicorn, Jen Wilkin, for sure. JT, would you add anything?
No, I think I know this is specifically directed to ministry wives, maybe a few of the pastors and maybe wives send this to your husbands or to your pastors, whatever it might be. I think there is a turning point in our relationship, Jen. We've had a few that I think also built trust that is related to how women can encourage men. And I'm going to highlight two of them. The first is when I was trying to hire Jen, she said something to me along the lines of, how do I know I'm not going to walk all over you? Because Jen not only is a woman, she is a forceful personality, right? And my response to her was, I'm married to Macy English. I'm not intimidated by you. And that's because I'm not. I've never been intimidated by Jen, but I value Jen and I want to. But like Jen and I are going to sometimes butt heads, but we're going to walk away and be like, hey, we're still friends. And that offered trust to Jen, not distrust. I think, Jen, you'd say it that way, right?
Absolutely.
Like it offered... she knew I wasn't intimidated by her, but that the best idea is going to win. We're going to work together. And then there was another moment where, when I was at the Village, Matt asked me to preach once. I'd never preached before. I preached in seminary and it was like terrible. They give you like 5 minutes to preach in seminary. Yeah. And then Matt's like, get up and preach. And I preached for like 55 minutes on our Saturday night service. It was terrible. It was just so bad. But like Matt is just so good at giving opportunities away. Like Matt extended mm-hmm. a lot of credibility to me that mm-hmm. I hadn't earned at the time, but just he wanted to see a young guy develop. And Jen came and encouraged me. I think maybe something that can happen in ministry is we always think the leader is encouraged. The guy that just mm-hmm. preached is doing great. He's on a high. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I hadn't preached a good sermon. And Jen came to me and said, keep going. You know, you're going to keep getting better.
It was not. Like, it was a good sermon.
That is
it
not
good.
True.
It just needed a few more illustrations.
I've asked everybody to delete it from the internet. Scrub that thing. Nobody can find it. It's on the dark web now. But like, I think what could have been seen is, man, there's the guy on the platform. He's got to be on a high. He's probably doing great. He just got to preach. Everybody's celebrating him. It's going to be on social media. And I was in the pit. Yeah. I was like so discouraged. I was like, man, I don't know. Maybe I'm not called. Like I was asking questions. Yeah. Maybe I'm not called to this. Maybe I shouldn't be doing. I mean, and Jen just came to me and said, hey, you have it. You're going to keep going. It's going to get better. Keep going. And that just meant the world to me when Jen encouraged me. So your pastors need encouragement.
Mm. Well, okay. And I would say there are a few small things that pastors can do that will signal to the women in the congregation that this is a place where women are valued. Like I remember the first time I did the announcements at the Village and the men didn't really remark on it, but the number of women who came up to me and said, I saw you did the announcements, you know, or when we had women leading worship.
Spiritual gift of announcements.
Yeah, I do. I have the spiritual gift of announcements.
So good.
Not everyone does. And we all know it.
You have it. There's no doubt.
But it was things like that. It was these symbolic moments that telegraphed to every woman in the room, hey, mm-hmm. women are valued here. I remember the first time I taught at our staff restore, people were like, wait, we can do that? Well, yeah, we're all on staff together. Like, you know, I'm teaching women's Bible study, you know, you duck in and out of there, some of the men. And so it was... It helps everybody to understand, oh, and that came from the top down, right? And so if you're the guy at the top, then it's going to matter a lot whether it's not enough to just say, yeah, this is a good idea. There have to be practical ways that the women in your church can see that you're invested in the idea.
Your new book that you guys have collaborated on together, it's called You Are a Theologian, An Invitation to Know and Love God Well. I would love for you to talk about it and what prompted you to write this book together.
I mean, this has been kind of a lifetime project, I think, for both Jen and I separately. And so then when we got to collaborate together doing it in the life of the local church, this just became kind of a obvious outcome, I think, in some mm-hmm. ways, where we both realize there's some pretty significant challenges in evangelicalism right now. We could name them legion, but one of them is we're theologically malnutritioned. Whether it's Lifeway or Ligonier doing their State of Theology, evangelicals do not believe the basics of the faith. They're often believing historic heresies. And that means there's problems in the life of the local church. This is not up for campus ministries to solve. It's not for nonprofit ministries to solve or seminaries or Bible colleges. This is for local churches. And one of the things that we've seen happen in the conversations around theology is we've thought, I'm not one. Those are for the academics, the pastors, the professionals, the elite people who have degrees. But one of the main arguments that we make in the book is every single person's a theologian because everybody has thoughts about God. Mm-hmm. So the question isn't, are you a theologian? The question is, are you a good one? Have you patterned your thought, your mind, your words, your affections around who God is and how he's revealed himself in scripture? So we try to answer that question. And then we also just give the basics of the Christian faith, basically we don't call it the Apostles' Creed, but it's just, who is God? What is God like? And who are we? What's gone wrong in the world? These are questions that not just Christians have to answer, but every person has to answer that we think the Bible gives clear answers to. So this isn't an academic textbook. It's not for probably the seminary student. This is for just everyday Christians to read in home groups or in the life of their mm-hmm. church to just ground themselves. We're actually going to do a series on theology at my church here this fall. And we're encouraging parents to ask these questions with their kids. Yep. Like these are questions for middle school students, for high school students, for college students. So we really wanted to last thing I'll say about this, when I first became a Christian, I got into college on probation. So people think of me as an academic. I got into the third best state school on probation. So like that's JT English's intellectual ability. Like, but then I became a Christian, and the first book that was handed to me was like a several hundred, like 300-500 page systematic theology with more footnotes than pages I had read in my life. So I was like, maybe this isn't for me. And so we wrote the book that I wish that mm-hmm. I wish I would have been handed when I first became a Christian, that would have kind of given me categories for answering some of these basic questions of the faith.
It's mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
Well, did he say it all, Jen, or do you have anything to add about
I think the book? I think as it relates even to the conversation that we just had, it's either that people don't know basic doctrines or that they have overemphasized one at the expense of others. And like, if you look at the conversation we just had, it's a classic example of an overemphasis on the doctrine of sin and an underemphasis on the doctrine of God and humanity. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a reason the Apostles' Creed goes in the order that it does. If we don't have a firm grip on the significance of image bearing, then we will dehumanize one another. And mm-hmm. I can't think of a more dehumanizing approach to formulating the church than to say women are a risk category instead of partners in the faith. So, yeah, I think the book is an example of an act of reclamation. We want to reclaim something that we think is important and beautiful. That's one example. But if you've never thought about what do Christians believe beyond sort of the things that come immediately to mind, this, we hope, is a great starting point mm-hmm. for you.
Well, thank you all for writing the book. Thank you for joining me today and contributing to this conversation. I'm so thankful for y'all and what you bring to the church. And I'm thankful for how you're demonstrating through your friendship and through your work together how to be brothers and sisters. So thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Ministry Wives podcast, a production of the North American Mission Board. I would love to hear from you. We are creating an episode full of our listeners' funniest or most embarrassing moments in ministry. Record and send your story to me at the link in the show notes. And don't forget, if you found this content helpful, please rate and review us on your podcast platform or share it with a friend. You can find this podcast and other helpful resources at ministrywivespodcast.com.